Okay, with our special guest tonight, Whitley Strieber. His latest work is called The Omega Point. More to come and your phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. Whitley, before we take calls, tell us more about this extraordinary event that has to do with the UFO or visitation.
Well, it's not a single event. It's the whole coming of the UFO, starting with the Maury Island UFO case that preceded the Kenneth Arnold sighting, and an absolutely fundamental change in the experience, human experience, which is that we began to look up and we begin to see mysteries, living mysteries that cannot be explained. And we begin a learning process of coming to terms with questions that we can neither answer nor explain. And we've gone through a long journey with this. Government cover-ups, government lies, the absurd skeptics community of calling them flocks of geese and swamp gas and whatever else they come up with, and the hoaxers that you see endless hoax videos on the on YouTube to this day.
It's got to be frustrating,
right? And the fake contactees and the real contactees who were experiences were so bizarre they seemed fake. The whole journey, it's very very different from all of our relationship with the unknown in the past. We've had occasional experiences. There was an extraordinary event in the late 16th century in Germany where all kinds of cylinders were appearing in the sky and so on and so forth. But it was just one event. Heck, that happens in this world somewhere every day. It's no big deal. It's not even a big news story anymore. And you have bizarre things that seem to be woven into space-time in extremely strange ways. Like Fred Chrisman, who was supposedly investigating the Maury Island UFO incident, also knew Lee Harvey Oswald when he lived in New Orleans. I mean, yeah, it's extremely weird. You think to yourself, it's another unanswerable question. My wife, Anne, has done some fascinating research that she will be talking about at the Dreamland Festival, incidentally, this weekend, which is that about what happens to the human brain when it is confronted by unanswerable questions. And when you understand this research, you realize this is not an accident. Somebody's doing this to us. We're being changed. And if you look back in history at the things like the experience of Ezekiel in the Bible, and you realize that this man had this experience, and many people in his community were having it too. It was done to them too. Someone comes into this world every once in a while, and they challenge the mind and brain of mankind with extraordinary questions, and we grow as a result. No matter how hard it is, how scary, how ugly, in the end, we survive and we grow. And, you know, I hope that we haven't come into an absolutely final endgame, because human life is too beautiful and too much fun. I have to tell you that. I have a grandson in my life, and the idea of something awful happening to that little boy because of some idiotic thing taking place in the Gulf of Mexico, it's unthinkable.
All right.
It's unthinkable.
To the calls. You ready?
Yeah.
We'll go to New Orleans. Let's get things started there. Danny, you're up with us. Hi, Danny. Thanks for calling.
Hey, George. Hi, Whitley. How you doing?
Fine, thank you.
It's been a great show tonight, first of all. You're always impressive, Whitley. I wanted to go a little bit off topic here. I've been a part of the Coast family for a while, but I haven't. I've been out of the loop for about the last year. Anyways, try to make this quick. I saw that movie, The Fourth Kind, today, and I wanted to get both. I don't know if you covered this, George. I wanted to get both of you guys' opinion as to how much Hollywood or sci-fi, or how much whether or not there's realism in this movie.
Well, I can tell you a lot about that. I know Ann and I had lunch with the director before he made the movie, and Annie, being Annie, she told him many things, and you can find hints of them all through the movie. The movie, and let's be clear about this, The Fourth Kind is a work of fiction pretending to be a documentary.
Right.
It is absolutely not real.
Okay.
The director did not intend it to be real. He was making what's called a faux documentary. That's French for false.
Right.
A false documentary. The town doesn't exist. The people don't exist. The stories are bits and pieces that he did with doing his own research, and some bits and pieces here and then there from Anne. And, I'm not saying, by the way, that there's nothing wrong with what he did. We had a wonderful time, and we were delighted that he made his movie. It was nothing, in other words, but like the clock, it comes on, you see the clock at 3:33.
Right.
And that came from Anne.
Yeah, I see that 3:33 a lot, too.
Right. Well, that's the reason it came from Anne is because people like us do wake up at 3:33 a lot.
Right.
And that's why it's in the movie. But the movie's a work of fiction, and it has a lot of real sort of abduction-related fact in it, but it's not an actual story.
I just want to add one more thing. I was listening to, was it the Nye interview that you did with Art Bell today? Was that you, Whitley?
On the Nye incidents?
Nye incidents, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. I did that.
Stuff, man. Some really creepy stuff.
It's creepy, all right. Well, you want creepy. I mean, I can give you creepy, believe me. Listen to the Alan Lammers interview that's on Dreamland a couple of weeks ago, and the way you do that is you go to Unknown Country, you click on the Dreamland link on the left side, the right side of the masthead, and you go down, I think, about one or two shows, and it'll mention the name Alan Lammers. Listen to that show about what's happening in Sulawesi, and that's a guy that you should get on Coast, by the way.
Okay.
It is the creepiest abduction story ever.
All right, we're going to Skype now. Victor's in Los Angeles. Hey, Victor, go ahead.
Hi, Whitley.
Hi there.
I sound great.
Yep.
Yeah, your coordinator there, that was probably the best Skype sound you ever
Very
had.
Clean. Yeah, it is good.
Yes, my question is, well, it's not so much of a question. You mentioned Egypt earlier, and my reviewing of Egypt and looking at the glyphics, I'm coming to the conclusion of Genesis 1, and where it mentioned God, and the one God. And you mentioned earlier about the one God that, Akhenaten declared? He declared there was one God?
Yeah, he did. But he believed the God he was talking about was the sun. So he wasn't quite there yet, but he was going in the right direction. This was before the Bible was even written.
And I'm looking at these major, I have this book, it's called, it's in Spanish. However, I'm just looking at the pictures, and it's defying things to me. These large-scale statues, I would say they were actually the scale of these pharaohs, the scale of these pharaohs, 15 feet, 20 feet tall, and even the ones that look smaller, but they're larger than the scale of us today, that was their actual height. And they are considered as the Anunnakis.
What did they do? They powder their skeletons or something? Because we never found any, I don't think.
No, and there's a lot of internet stuff going on that is not real either, that shows giants, things
skeletons.
Like that.
Yeah, that's all fake, that stuff.
Yep. Why did people do that? They kill real research.
Well, the internet is a new toy, and, like all new toys, it's like the automobile was around in the 20s. People were abusing automobiles in all kinds of bizarre ways in those days, or airplanes. I remember wing walking and stuff. The internet is the hoax, and people suddenly realize, I have the ability to do this and go everywhere with it, and I can fool people. It gives me power, a rush of excitement. That's what it's all about.
Next up, we go to New Paltz, New York. Henry is there. Good morning, Henry.
Good morning.
Hi.
I was going to try to see if I could talk to you about two topics. One was UFO related, and the other is Philosopher's Stone.
Sure.
Back in the early 80s, I acquired a copy of Isaac Newton's book, Open Entrance into the Shut Palace of the King, which was supposedly written by Nicholas Flamel, an alchemist and French alchemist. And I don't recall how I found this guy, but somehow I met a guy in Montreal who, ordinary person, and he wasn't selling anything, so I knew he was an honest guy. And he had told me he had studied with a group in France who was supposedly an offshoot of the Rosicrucians, and they had maintained the secret of the Philosopher's Stone. And he had, they had produced, I think back in the 60s, they produced a set of color photographs, which he gave me some copies of, showing the making of the Philosopher's Stone. And he said he had actually witnessed a 50-pound vat of mercury transmuted instantaneously into gold while he was there. Of course, you know, he didn't learn the full secrets. He was kind of like a seeker. And but I had no reason to doubt he was telling me the truth. Like I said, he gave me a set of these plates and the little explanation that went along with it. And, of course, the white powder that you mentioned would be one of the perfections of the Philosopher's Stone. First comes a process where you get a red liquid called the dragon's blood, and that has the ability to coagulate mercury. And if you do three distillations or whatever, three processes, you get up to a white powder, which I think will transmute mercury into silver. If you do up to, you know, more than three, more towards seven, you have the ability to transmute mercury into gold. But you know, that was just my little foray into alchemy years ago. And the other thing I was going to mention to you is that, you know, people always talk about technology for UFOs, and, you know, there have been people on the shows, but I've never really seen too many people mention there is an actual methodology that you can model using mathematical formulas, valid formulas out of, you know, physics textbook, that will predict magnetic propulsion. And it's almost alien in its nature, in that, you know, if you build a machine on this principle, the smaller you make it, the more powerful it becomes. And because it works on a square law, if you make it half as small, it becomes four times more powerful, you know. And years ago, my friend and I had fooled around with it a little bit. And we had drawn up some. We didn't patent anything, but we had drawn up some patents. And actually, the patent drawings we came up with as a schematic for it, actually, I didn't realize until after the crop circles first came out in the late 80s. But the first crop circles, which were the two balls connected by a bar with a little kind of squiggly F kind of flag off the top, is an exact model for the propulsion system. And in fact, the schematics I draw in were basically like two wires basically connected, mechanically connected by a bar. And off the end was a little inductor, which is symbolizing a phase shift. And that's the exact model of the early crop circles. But this technology, you know, my friend is a pretty good scientist, physicist, and he's been involved in, you know, talking to people all over, you know, the country, you know, in the military-industrial complex. And he tells me that he's always amazed and astounded how little the scientists who are supposedly involved in this field understand magnetics. It's one of his strong points. And I've seen him build some things that actually, you know, do the opposite of some laws of physics. But he tells me that, you know, he just doesn't believe that we have anything flying out there, because he says the people that should know don't know some of the basic stuff. So, but anyway, I just wanted to mention that there is a process, and I wish somebody would get around to developing it. And
yeah, because we might need to go somewhere else. That book is a very interesting one, The Open Palace, Open Interest, The Closed Palace of the King. It's late 17th century, Philopheles, I think, was the author.
Right.
And it actually, you know, I recall a lot about magnetism in that book. It's been a long time since I've read it, and it's a, you know, like all alchemical works from that era, it's really a chore to read. They don't make it easy.
Did you ever look into the Coral Castle, Whitley? Edward Lake?
Oh, sure, absolutely.
That's fascinating.
Isn't that, well, see, you mentioned alchemy and the science of ancient Egypt, and this remarkable man, he had something all right. No question whatsoever about it, and he left behind one of the most fascinating mysteries in the United States, which is the Coral Castle. And you have to wonder how one man, I've been there, I've seen it, how one man working alone, mostly at night, could possibly have built it.
Move those blocks of stone.
With any kind of equipment, let alone what he had.
He had the secret.
He did. He had the secret. You know, I was thinking as you were talking, listener, that about when the visitors, the a particular one of them that is on the cover of Communion, used to come a lot, and I wish I could say I spent a lot of time sitting around shooting the breeze with her, him, or it, but I didn't. But when this individual would come, often the coming would be announced by something coming over the house, and it would sound like something that had been rotating very quickly, slowing down, and you could hear like almost like ball bearings clicking as it went over the house at an altitude of maybe 5 feet, and then there would be usually a brief flash of light in the front yard, and you go running out with a camera. There wouldn't be a thing there, but the thing is, at least nothing you could see. The thing is, it was like some very high speed, something was rotating very quickly that gave this thing its motive power.
That's fascinating.
It was fascinating, yeah. And one time I got close to one that was on the ground, it was making a much louder version of that clicking noise. It was bigger, too, and it almost sounded like a broken washing machine. I mean, it was that kind of clanky, like it was something that had, you know, when it wasn't running very fast, there was a lot of play in the mechanism.
Whitley, is there an element of time travel to this 2012?
Huge in the book. The book, when mankind reaches beyond the Omega point, and the people who are innocent enough to see reality as it is also learn to step beyond space and time, and that is how they escape the end.
Let's come back and take final calls with Whitley Strieber right here on Coast to Coast AM. On our next Coast to Coast program, Stephen Quayle joins us, and among the things we will be talking with Stephen about, reports of a blonde Bigfoot. I kid you not. I'm looking forward to this one. When we come back, we'll finish up with some final phone calls with Whitley Strieber right here on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, here we are, final segment with Whitley Strieber. Whitley, great insight, by the way, into this whole phenomenon of 2012.
Well, thank you.
It is something that's...
You know, there are a couple of things I would like to just mention quickly.
Sure.
Here. First of all, about the oil spill, the Earth abides, and this is a huge thing that's happening, but in the end, the Earth abides. There was a gigantic spill in the Gulf of Mexico in 1979 by Pemex.
It was huge.
Huge. And they thought in those days it would kill the Gulf of Mexico.
290 straight days of leakage.
Exactly. And it didn't kill the Gulf of Mexico. Now, something very few people know is in 1906, according to an article in Science News that appeared in 1989, kindly sent to me by an unknown country reader, there's an explosion from below a crater that probably ejected an enormous amount of oil into the Gulf because of pressure from oil-bearing formations below the surface, and it survived that too. And this, you know, in the end, if we get it stopped, it will survive. Another thing I want to say that I just learned, it doesn't really fit the show, but it fits the mystery of being that Coast to Coast AM is about. And that is that an incredible discovery, fossil discovery, has just been made in the Philippines. It is of the foot bone of a Homo erectus, of a hominid, of more primitive even than the Neanderthals.
And before Lucy, right?
Not before Lucy, no. 70,000 years ago. Now, what this means is that human beings were not just going from island to island 70,000 years ago. They were traveling the high seas.
Yeah.
All that time ago. What are we? There's something marvelous going on this planet. It's us.
And I'm sure Christopher Columbus didn't discover us in 1492 either.
Oh, we've been traveling the...
Way before.
Way before. You know, I had a guy on Dreamland years ago, a Dutch scientist, and I wish I could find his book again. And listeners, if anyone knows anything about this, please send the information to whitley@streber.com, because what he had done, and his book had barely been published. No one believed it. It was nonsense, etc. He had discovered, you know, all these little scratchings on Stone Age rocks that are found all around the world.
Right.
He had rolled these stones in sand and discovered that they were maps. He found one in Italy.
Oh, yeah. Michael Cremo mentioned his
Michael
name.
Cremo probably does know who this man was. Incredible. He found a map of Chesapeake Bay. He found a map of the Straits of Messina in Italy, between Italy and Sicily, that even showed the direction of the wind. We don't know who we are, where we came from, how long we've been here. We don't know where we're going. We're right in the middle of this marvelous experience of being the greatest mystery in the world.
It is an exciting time.
Boy, is it. I mean, you talk about living in interesting times. We have that jammed down our throats.
No, we sure do.
We sure do. It's so exciting. So I don't want to, we've had a kind of one of these gloom and doom shows, and that's fine. It's been exciting. It's been fascinating, and I really love doing it. But I always like to remind myself and others that I feel the presence of a plan for mankind. I don't think that we are alone. I don't think we are abandoned. I think the visitors are very real. I think they represent a complicated, dangerous, and transformative presence on the earth. I mean, I think we're going to have a lot of trouble with some of them, and we're going to get a lot of blessings from others. Someone mentioned just in passing, just in the last caller mentioned the Nye incidents, and that's allegedly going to be made into a movie, but, you know, we'll see it when we see it. It's what it is a graphic novel I wrote with another man, Craig Spector, of a story that scared me so bad that I actually called on Craig to help me with it, because he's a person that's very, very hard to scare. He's written some extremely cool horror novels. But anyway, it is about a group of incidents that I was never able to track down to say were entirely real, of apparent human abductions and mutilations that took place in New York State and northern New Jersey back in the early 90s. And of course, what scared me so badly about this is that there were 17 of these cases, and they were taking place right in the area where I was actually going out in the woods alone at night to encounter the visitors. You know, 10 minutes away and probably 10 seconds away by flying saucer.
Didn't that scare you at all?
Did it, to go out in the woods?
Yeah.
George, you had to work to put one foot in front of the other to do that. It was hard. It was unbelievably terrifying.
I bet.
Oh, but at the same time, what I got out of it was a perhaps
absolutely premier experience. I wouldn't trade it for the world. Incredible.
Yeah, but would you love to give away that implant in there by the ear, if you could?
I don't know. My wife has good instincts about all of this stuff, and she says, leave it in.
Leave it in.
Leave it in, and I've never felt the faintest sense of any mind control. But then, as we always say when we get together and talk about this on the air, I wouldn't, would I? You know, that's the whole point. You don't know.
We'll wrap it up here. Drew is in Atlanta, Georgia. Drew, you're on with Whitley Strieber. Go ahead.
Hey, George. Hey, hi. Whitley. I love the show.
Thank you.
Caller. I was just going to make a comment. I know you were talking about the Earth, you know, renews itself with the other oil spills, but in Revelations, it talks about turning the seas to blood. And I was looking at some images of the oil spill, and that does have a reddish tint.
It sure does.
I forgot to bring that up, and I'm glad you did, caller, because yes, it does. It certainly does. And that who knows if that isn't what's happening right now. I mean, I can't disagree with you there.
That's right in line with Felipe from Orlando, who sends a text message to you. Whitley wants to know if there's any biblical prophecy here. I think so.
Well, it could be. I mean, we've been talking about Revelation 20:12 being the last judgment, and it could be that that remarkable document written in so many years ago has got real resonance for the here and now. I wouldn't discount that as a possibility anymore at all.
We go to Phoenix now. Tim, west of the Rockies. Hey, Tim, go ahead. How's the weather out there?
Oh, you know what? It's actually not as bad as it usually is, and I credit it to the volcano. All that ash is kind of sending some of that heat back.
Yeah, could be.
All right. Well, I wanted to ask Whitley about the third secret of Fatima. I never really bought the Vatican's rendition of it that came out a few years ago. And I feel that it really did. The original secret did speak to World War III. And I think I heard him on Art's show one time that he was stating that, you're talking to Dr. Malachi or Father Malachi Martin about the about that there would be a war and there would be flooding along it.
Malachi Martin told me that the third secret of Fatima had to do with flooding and rain and ice, and that the reason the Vatican, the flooding of coastal water, coastlines and stuff, and the reason the Vatican didn't want to release it was that they were afraid that it would cause the destruction of economic value and coastlines all over the world, or if it turned out not to be true, they would be embarrassed and discredited. I agree with you that the third secret that was released eventually was a load of nonsense. I'm sure it looked like it was something made up by a school child. And the first secret was so potent with the thing about the sign in the sky before the next war, and it happened right before World War II. I mean, that's hard to discredit. And so my guess is that whatever the third secret was, it was probably something more like Malachi was saying than what the Pope revealed.
Good point. Okay, we go next to Spartanburg, South Carolina, first-time caller. Everett, go ahead, Everett.
Oh, go ahead, George. I've been listening to you for 10 years. I've been trying to call. Your other caller stole my thunder about the seas will be turned to red and all the living, there will be no more living in the seas. That's in, I think, the second chapter of Revelation.
Mm-hmm.
The second angel will come down and strike the seas. And I believe that's what's happening in the Gulf right now, because if that thing explodes, we're not talking, I'm talking about they don't get the oil stop. I'm talking about the tsunami effect. If this thing erupts and explodes, it could destroy all the living creatures in all the seas.
Oh, it could be. It could be just something of biblical proportions.
And if there's a pastor, his name is Pastor Arnold Murray with Shepherd's Chapel. You get back to UFOs, mm-hmm. things like of this nature. When God shows himself to Ezekiel, it's in the book of Ezekiel. I don't know which chapter it is, but it talks about what God, he came down in a fiery ember, and there was like discs turning, and there were faces looking out of these discs, and their faces were stretched, and they had big eyes, and their feet were like calves' feet. And, you know, you had a guest on the other night, and he was talking about our society is much older, and we're going backwards in time. I mean, yeah. Catastrophic event, and the world was destroyed, and some people somehow or another escaped. Well, I think these people did escape, and I thank God. He may be an extraterrestrial, you know, but he's the man, and the Bible is the book, and it's everything's in there, and the fight between good and evil is where it's all what it's all about.
And as you said earlier, Whitley, there is evil here.
Oh yeah, to take the secular viewpoint that things like that don't exist is naive, exactly. And you know, there's going to be probably a lot of reviews in the sort of secular press about this book, about the Omega Point, and because it is about what it's about, those reviews are going to be scathing. So expect that and read it anyway, because this is those people in that world, the world of the conventional newspapers and stuff. They're part of the past now. They're over.
When you write these novels based on fact now, are there events out there that come to you? You witness things, you get an idea. How does this flow for you?
Most it's interior. I wouldn't say it's too much events outside. What happens to me is I have these urges that, you know, like things that seem important to me, and I begin trying to express them, and it always feels impossible, like I can't do it, and like the book has failed from the beginning to the end. And then eventually someone will say, well, you know, this actually works pretty well. It's a pretty good book. And they publish it, and usually people are pretty happy with it. That's the process, but it never feels right, ever, when I'm really doing something that matters. When I'm doing just rolling along, you know, writing a nice, fun, entertaining book, it's easy. But books like this, like The Omega Point, was absolutely really hard to write. It's just a very, very, very difficult experience.
Okay, let's go to Yakima, Washington. Time for one or two more calls. Go ahead, David.
Hello, George. Hello, Whitley.
Hi.
Been part of the Coast to Coast family for 20 years, and Whitley, I've studied everything that you've had to say and write, and, you know, frankly, respectfully, I'm a bit shocked tonight. It sounds like you've got more of a biblical paradigm that you've ever had in your life. I've never heard you talk like this. And, you know, it's not so much of a mystery. You know, Revelation talks about the end. We'd come into an understanding of what's going on here. And basically, you know, in the Bible, if you look at all the scriptures and you talk about Moses, that the gods of Egypt were an aberration to the God of Israel. And that you see references of Tutankhamun, the plumed serpent or the flying serpent, Lord Pakal of the Mayans, and the divinity of the serpent. And basically the UFO abductions, everything. You know, Whitley, this really all comes down to a showdown at the OK Corral. This is about the God of Israel and all the other lesser gods. Isn't it really? Because everything is, you know, when you look at Egypt and Osiris and the parallels between the god of the gods of Egypt and the gods of the Hebrews, the truth was there, but it was perverted just a little bit. Just a little bit. Everything is the difference between the truth and a lie is just a little perversion.
It's always just a hair, that's right. But it's a very big, a very important little hair.
And sometimes a wide gap.
Yeah, but I mean, the real operation of evil in its exquisite skill makes it feel and seem like it's something good.
The Omega Points out there in the bookstores. When you wake up, it should be there, right, Whitley?
Absolutely. It should be in the bookstores. And so go get one. Do it.
You know, people just love to just wander around bookstores.
Yeah, and we need bookstores for that reason.
Yeah,
so
we really do.
Get it. Go to the bookstore and take a look at it.
You can have some fun on the bookstores.
Yeah, you can.
You know, they're one of a kind. Say, give Anna a hug for me, my friend. Let's keep in touch, all right?
Surely will. We'll be back together soon, George.
And good luck. Hey, whoa, get your Dreamland event out this weekend, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, I think it's you. I guess someone from Nashville could probably, or nearby, could grab a ticket on unknowncountry.com and come. And there are a few seats left, I think. And so do come if you would like to. We have a great time.
All right. And you've got Linda coming down again, don't you?
Linda's coming. Jim Morris is coming. William Henry is coming. Marla Freed is coming.
The heavy hitters.
The Dreamland team.
You got it. All right. Thanks, Whitley.
Thank you, George.
Good guy. UnknownCountry.com is Whitley's website. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasur, Stephanie Smith, Ross Mitchell, George Knapp, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.